Alrighty then, hello there, and welcome to North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and of course, the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell. Ooh, and it's our Monday night sports program, been going here for now 10 years. Tim Kern's not with us until after baseball season, of course, and then he will return. Kind of a cool night here in eastern Massachusetts. Temperature says 56 degrees, but I don't believe that. It feels a lot cooler. Just got in from a lacrosse game. We'll go over some high school scores. We've got plenty of them this evening. We'll go over those as we usually do. And I want to tell you about a terrific lineup that we have tonight. And I can't wait to get started. We have sports author Charles Learson on. He is a writer of some terrific books. He's also a journalist, author, adjunct professor at the City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism. And he'll join us by phone, as all of our guests will. He's been featured in Sports Illustrated, on ESPN, and he is the winner of the Baseball Book of the Year last year. So we'll talk with Charles Learson about a terrific book about Ty Cobb, among other things, I hope. We'll also be checking in with Gary Larrabee. He's our sports historian and golf writer here on the North Shore. And other guests include Bob Boyce, assistant baseball coach over at Danvers High School. See if we can connect with him. Gloucester Times sports editor Nick Kukuru. Scott Cooper, we're going to try to check in with Scott toward the end of the hour and see what's going on in Swampscott and Marblehead sports. And we'll talk with Beverly boys lacrosse coach John Pinchon. I believe the boys are around 17-0 right now in boys lacrosse, just dominating the Northeastern Conference. And we'll check in with Coach Pinchon in just a little while. So that is our lineup. Let's see here. We have to take a quick break, and then we'll see if we can check in with our first guest of the evening. And hope you'll stay with us and spread the word, will you? This is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsports.com. So hang in there. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan, and today I'd like to speak to you about the North Shore Student Athlete Program. Sponsored by Moynihan Lumber in conjunction with the Salem News, the Daily Item, the New Report Daily News, and the Gloucester Times. The program, now in its 24th year, celebrates high school students who excel not just on the playing field, but in the classroom as well. Male and female winners are chosen each month. All student athletes must be nominated by their coaches. Nominations for the program are made via email to nsstudentathlete@gmail.com. Youngsters who are nominated must have a B average or better. Monthly winners are then eligible to be selected as Student Athletes of the Year. Yearly winners and their families are recognized at a luncheon at the Salem Country Club held in early June. Please remember, all youngsters playing a varsity sport at any high school on the North Shore, public, private, or parochial, are eligible.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodright replacement windows. Why Anderson? With low-E glass, low-maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSO Radio.
North Shore Now.
News and sports. Josh Arnold's Trending Now.
What do you think of the presidential primaries now? I mean, it's you know, we've made it this far along. Any sense of how it's? Do you see anything coming out of this other than a Trump-Clinton square off in November?
Trending Now with Josh Arnold on MSONewsSports.com.
All right, here we go. We're back. I'm with Charles Learson now, who is a sports writer, sports author, journalist, adjunct professor, it says here. And Charles, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. And how are you?
I'm good. My pleasure. Nice to be here with you.
Thank you very much. I tell you what got me started. My producer, we're both sports nuts, and we've been doing this locally for a long time now. I'm a retired math teacher as well. But he got me onto the first thing he did was he asked me about Ty Cobb one night. We're actually at a trivia contest, and he asked me about what my thoughts were about Ty Cobb, and two words came to mind: spikes and mean. And he started laughing. Mm-hmm. And then he turned me on to you, the speech that you did recently, I guess a few weeks ago at Hillsborough College, and it was absolutely fantastic. So I want to start there, if we could, about this Ty Cobb speech that you did on maybe turning the whole picture around as to what a little real investigation is like in terms of digging out history. So let's start there. Who was Ty Cobb, and why is the history that we know wrong?
Well, Ty Cobb is, there's three camps on Ty Cobb, I noticed, when I started working on this book, which is now almost 5 years ago. One was the people who didn't know who he was, never heard of him. Even there were even some baseball fans in that category. It's always depressing, when you realize how little people know about history of any kind. So there was that group. But then there was the group, the larger group probably, that understood that he was one of the greatest baseball players of all time. A guy who has, he batted 366 or 367, depending on which side of the argument you want to take, over the course of 23 and a half years. When he retired, it was the highest lifetime batting average in history, and it still is the highest lifetime batting average in history. So he's undeniably a great player, but there's a great, reputation off the field that goes with it, also on the field, of being a horrible human being, a racist, a sadist kind of, who slid into people trying to injure them and then, end their careers, a misogynist and anything you could think of, a murderer. People have asked me if I was going to be writing about the black waiter that he stabbed to death in Cleveland because the young man was uppity. So these myths and these stories have gotten out there about Cobb, and I believed them when I started the book. I pitched this book in a traditional way to Simon & Schuster, a big New York publisher, and we talked about it, and one of the things that the publisher and I both found appealing was that there hadn't been a major Cobb bio in more than 20 years, and Cobb was such a prominent player, so let's do this. I figured I would just go, I'm a good reporter, I would get fresh examples of him being a monster, and I'd blend those with the examples that had already been dug up in other books and articles, and we'd be off to the races, and we'd have a new biography. But what happened, I wound up researching the book for more than 4 years, but it's funny to say, I still laugh when I think about it, within the first 10 or 15 minutes of my research, I began to see the myth started to get hairline cracks in it, and it started to fall apart, the myth of Ty Cobb, the monster, as I did research.
That's incredible. And let me interrupt you here, Charles, if I may, because I want to remind people that the name of the book that won the award, it's from all everything, and I've ordered the book, I don't have it yet, but it's called Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty, and that's the name of the book that we're talking about, and it dispels many of the, I was going to call them myths, but they were truths to a kid like me when I was reading about Cobb a long time ago.
Well, there's that movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. People forget everything about the movie except that one line in it, and I'm going to paraphrase it myself, it's like when the legend beats the facts, print the legend.
Yep.
People heard this legend over and over. And one of my points in that speech that I made at Hillsdale College about Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty, was that people mistake... One thing I learned on this project is people mistake repetition for evidence. It's not the same thing. An assertion made, if I say Ty Cobb was a racist, I could say that over and over and over again, but unless I bring in some evidence to back that up, I haven't really said anything. And of course people, in that particular case, people say, well, how could Ty Cobb not be a racist? He's the Georgia peach. Mm-hmm. He was born in Georgia in 1886, during the period of Reconstruction, which some people have said was even a crueler time than slavery, or certainly, just two different flavors of cruelty there. But you know, how could he not be? Well, when I found out, when I did real research, and I went back and checked the historical records and letters and birth certificates and what was said and written in newspapers, what I found out was that Ty Cobb descended from a long line of abolitionists, that his great-grandfather was a preacher who preached against slavery and got run out of town for it. His grandfather was the equivalent of a conscientious objector who would refuse to fight in the Civil War because of the slavery issue. And his father was an educator and a state senator who stood up for the rights of his black constituents in Georgia, had a very short political career as a result, but he once broke up a lynch mob and ran it out of town. So that's the background that Cobb comes from abolitionists. Now, there's nothing on the record. People say Ty Cobb is an avowed racist. I say, well, where did he make the vow? Just show it to me and I'll believe you. What vow are you talking about? Ty Cobb, there's nothing he said about on the issue of race, because nobody, reporters wouldn't have asked that question. But until 1952, when the Texas League, the minor league, was finally integrating 5 years after the major league, and people asked, the sporting news asked Ty Cobb what he thought of this, and he said, the Negro should be accepted wholeheartedly and not grudgingly. The Negro has the right to play professional sports, and who's to say he has not? It's a pretty strong statement in 1952, that coming at a time when a lot of people were just buttoning their lips to say they didn't agree with integration, or they were saying, I don't think it's right, I don't think it's the way to go. Ty Cobb said, accept it wholeheartedly and not grudgingly. By that time, Cobb had attended many Negro League games. He sat in the dugout with the players. You can find his name, his autograph, on the baseballs with other Negro League stars, that Negro League stars have signed. He threw out the first pitch at Negro League games. So the myth about the racism just is completely went out the window. He's an exception to the rule, and a glorious one, and we should honor him for that, not berate him for our assumptions about where and when he was born.
There is so much to talk about here, and as an educator, I just really want to get into this, but first of all, my introduction with Ty Cobb, again, when I was a kid, I read all Rabbit Maranville and the Dean brothers and Honus Wagner, but Ty Cobb to me was the icon because of his longevity and because, what do you have, something like 4,000 hits, just unbelievable. And then all this myth stuff. But Charles, as you were doing your research, it sounds to me it's almost like you know the man, or you feel you know the man. Did you begin to get sort of I don't know, a feeling of like this is someone you now know or knew? You know what I'm trying to ask here? It seems like it's a passion.
Yeah, it's a good question. One thing you know when you're a researcher and you know you're on the right track when things start to dovetail into each other that you get from different sources and they make sense and one thing supports the other. You know, Ty Cobb was not a saint or a choir boy. He was not a racist, but he was not, I don't put him as unrealistically in the other direction. You know, no one is perfect, and he had many faults. He was extremely high-strung, easy to get in an argument with, easy to get in a fist fight with. He didn't suffer fools gladly, and he thought of too many other people as fools. He came along, he was really sort of the first superstar when baseball was a new thing. He came up in 1905, and the major leagues were only about 4 years old at that point, so this idea of being a star baseball player was a new thing. He didn't handle that responsibility well all of the time, so he's not a perfect man, and I'm not his apologist or his lawyer, but I did get a sense of who he was, a guy caught between, as I say in the book, trying to be like the Southern cavalier who's very quick to draw his sword and defend his honor, and also the Southern gentleman who's very quick to extend hospitality and be gracious and gentlemanly. He was caught between those two personas all his life, and he went back and forth between them, but he was not the one-dimensional monster and cartoon character I found out. You know, I should have known that he couldn't have been that, because who is that? You know, other people have said, the myth gets embroidered on and gets exaggerated every time it's retold, like a game of telephone, you know, at a party when you're whispering somebody here and people retell the story. By the time it comes out the other end, it's completely distorted. You know, there's a writer named Timothy Gay, a respected baseball writer, wrote a book about Tris Speaker, who was a contemporary of Cobb, And in that book, he said that Ty Cobb was such a racist that he couldn't abide the sight of a black person walking down the street, that if he saw an African-American person, he would pistol whip that person on the street. I mean, come on, give me a break. He would have got the stuffing beat out of him a lot of times, even in jail. I mean, it just didn't happen. That's not realistic. That's a cartoon character. So I should have known when I was, reading stuff like that, that couldn't have been the case.
The thing about his early career, wanting to please people, also fascinated me. I had never read anything like that before, and I guess much like today, where ball players are they have to commit to certain charities or certain functions of the ball team. Could you relate that on some of his extracurricular activities for the team?
Well, yeah, he did a lot of personal appearances when he was young, and it's a time. It's really interesting. At baseball players, as I said, they were trying to figure out their role in society. It was a brand new thing in 1905 when he came up. You have to realize that the grown men, were the men who were in their 40s and 50s, say, sitting in the stands in 1905, when they grew up, there were no major leagues. There was no little league. There was no, people may have played baseball in town, some form of baseball, but it was all, they didn't have spikes or equipment. It was all very catch as catch can. And now there were these, in 1905, there were these major leagues with published schedules and uniforms and the teams traveled around on trains and went all around the eastern part of the country, the eastern half of the country. So it was a whole new thing, and both the players and even the fans were trying to figure out how to act, the way of being, to conduct yourself in a ballpark, because the rise of professional sports was something brand new, and there were fans who didn't know that when Ty Cobb first came up in 1905, if enough people didn't like the umpire's call, it was very common for people to jump over the fence in mobs and chase an umpire. And there was only one umpire on the field in those days. The week before Ty Cobb came up to the major leagues, the fans in Detroit jumped over the fence, chased the umpire into the clubhouse, where he called a forfeit of the game for whoever Detroit was playing at the time. So the crazy stuff like that was happening then.
So he had to, I guess some of the ball players had to sort of make up for that, or have some kind of public relations gimmick to draw the crowds. Fascinating stuff. But what gets me, Charles, is the three books that are featured on your website are all not fringe sports, but really getting into it. And that's what fascinates me, is your research. And maybe you could, again, relate some of the research that you did versus the popular and accepted myth of Ty Cobb prior to your books being published. Because I know that having taught a lot of kids get their history from a movie like JFK or from Fox TV about the moon landing. So tell me a little bit about your research and how important it is.
Well, I did a lot of research. I won the Society of American Baseball Researchers Research Award, and I'm very proud of that. But what I did was standard research in a history book, but that kind of research is not often done on baseball books. Baseball books are often thought of, oh, it's just baseball, so some old sports writer sits at his desk and remembers stuff and composes stuff at the keyboard and makes up a lot of stuff or misremembers a lot of stuff, and that's good enough for baseball. That's really what happened to Ty Cobb to a great degree over the years, of how these myths got started. And we can talk about that a little bit more. But what I did was, I did a lot of research, but I did the standard research that you apply if you were writing a book about, say, Abraham Lincoln. You can't just say something. You have to, if you make an assertion, you have to back it up with evidence. So, I went back, and that's why I looked. No one had really done that with Cobb. No one had looked at the historical record, had looked at gone back to the original papers and letters, and even the newspaper coverage in those days. It was a little bit the sports writers were quite kind to the teams, generally speaking, with a lot of exceptions in those days. But the nice thing about it was there were so many more newspapers. I think there were like 7 daily newspapers in Detroit for most of Cobb's career covering him. So there was a lot of competition and between the papers, and so a lot of digging. And baseball is a sport in those days, 156 games, I guess, a season. The players are around a long time. They're out there. you could really get a sense of who they are and the dramas behind the scenes that were going on in the teams, you know, the tensions and the arguments between the teammates and the players as the seasons progress. So in a way, if you wanted to spend the time, all that information is out there to look for it, but just that no one had really done that with Cobb, and it's still in a lot of cases, no one does that enough with baseball players. Those standard procedures of historical research are not really applied to baseball because, hey, it's just baseball. But if we look at it the right way, we get a much clearer and more accurate picture.
Well, it's interesting because we have our icon here in Eastern Massachusetts in Ted Williams, and, you know, he was the real John Wayne, but then after getting away from the popular baseball books, you realize that he, too, was a very complex man and a flawed character, and I think because we're so close to it, it was easy, and it's more contemporary. It was a little bit more contemporary than Ty Cobb. But your books, I haven't read, I do have the one on order, but your other topics, your other books also look fascinating to me. Blood and Smoke about the Indy 500 and Crazy Good, the best horse ever.
Yeah, Dan Patch, that name, believe it or not, he was the most famous horse in America at one time, right around the turn of the 20th century. And today the name is known usually only by people who've seen The Music Man or been in The Music Man in a high school production of it. Because there's that song in there where they say, oh, we don't want some jockey boy sitting on the back of Dan Patch. But Dan Patch was a real horse, was a harness horse, a pacer. Believe it or not, that was a bigger sport at the turn of the century, just before the automobile became popular, because it was the kind of horse that would pull the family carriage, and the world was getting more ready for carriage horses and had better roads and whatnot. So, but the Dan Patch was a huge success. You know, I'm drawn, and the book about the Indy 500 called Blood and Smoke was about not the whole history of the race, but just that first Indy 500 in 1911, which was a fascinating race. The first time they ever tried a big auto race like that, and they completely lost track. They had no way of tracking all the cars that were on it for all those laps.
Mm-hmm.
and chaos broke out, and we still don't know. My point in the book, and it gets a lot of people mad out in the Indianapolis, we still cannot say for sure who won that first Indy 500. It may have been the guy, Ray Haroon, that is officially given credit for it. It may well be him, but we will never be able to say for sure. But the uniting principle in all this, and what fascinates me, is that time in history, say roughly between 1880 and the First World War. I think it's the most revolutionary time in history. Even, you know, all of us who are listening to this now have lived through the era of the cell phone. They didn't used to be cell phones. Now there's smartphones. We all walk around staring at them, checking into them, all these devices. And that's certainly changed the world, not just our behavior at dinner, but it's also changed the way we communicate. And that's been fundamental and revolutionary. But if you think of that period between 1880 and the First World War, you had so many new innovations in society in America. You had the advent of electricity, just for one thing, widespread throughout the country. You had the airplane, you had the automobile, you had the radio, you had movies, the telegraph already existed, but the typewriter. All these things are revolutionary, and these other trends in society with women getting the vote and women showing up in the workplace more and more, the world changing. Also a mass migration in America as corporations took over farms and consolidated and bought up all these family farms and made these giant farms as we know them today. And the people who are on the farms had to uproot themselves after some centuries in some case, get on trains and move to the big city and reinvent themselves. It was a very upsetting, tumultuous, revolutionary, exciting time in America. You know, there were civil war. I found out when I did that book about the Indy 500 and the early auto racing, there were Civil War veterans who were killed at the automobile racetracks when the cars flew off the track, you know, in a couple of cases. Guys who fought in the Civil War. I mean, what a blending of times and generations. Who would have ever thought, you know, and there may have been an airplane flying over their head at the time when the accident happened. I mean, that's the kind of era it was. It bridged the mid-19th century, which was connected to the Middle Ages in a lot of ways, and the late 19th century, early 20th century, which is very much connected to where we are now in society and technology.
How did you get into journalism, Charles?
I was just something I always wanted to do. I grew up in New York City. I grew up a couple of blocks from Yankee Stadium, but I was never a Yankee fan. I was a Yankee hater. So I was interested in sports. And I guess that got me interested in wanting to tell stories. My father took me to the racetrack and the ball games, and I got interested in that. And I always drawn to writing. So that's what got me interested. And I worked at Newsweek and at Tay Day and at People Magazine and, Sports Illustrated. I was an editor, and now I'm writing the books.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, before I let you go, are you working on something new?
I am. It's not a baseball book. I'm working on a book about Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Obviously, the real guys, not the movie guys, although there were quite a few interesting similarities that, for once, Hollywood got it right.
Oh.
Got it more right than they knew, I think.
Interesting.
In terms of those guys, their personality and their style of being outlaws. So that's a fascinating topic. But Ty Cobb and the book Ty Cobb, The Terrible Beauty, was a life-changing experience for me. I learned so much about the way people, what can happen to reputations when people latch on to a story that they want to believe as opposed to the truth. And the irony of it all is that the truth is a lot more interesting than the silly old myths.
Absolutely. I'm going to recommend this to our English department because I think it's just a fantastic treatise, if you will, on research and how important it is to get the history right. And as a summary here, in your speech, the last thing you say is, "I guess it's me versus Al Stump. Who knows who will win? What I know for certain is that the greatness of Ty Cobb was something that had to be seen, and to see it was to remember it forever." So many glowing reviews that I've read about the book, and all I want to know is, Charles, is how do I get to vote you versus Al Stump?
Buy the book, read it, and tell a friend.
And that's what I'm doing. Absolutely.
Great.
Charles, I hope I can connect with you at some time in the not-too-distant future. But in the meantime, God, congratulations, and just thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you so much. This has been fun.
Great. Take care, Charles. Thank you very much.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Charles Learson, who is an author of three books, award-winning books, among other things, and you heard the story. The books are the first one, Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty. I mean, that one just is fantastic. The others are Blood and Smoke, about the first Indy 500, and Crazy Good, about the most beloved horse of all time, horse racing horse of all time. Wow, I could go on and on, but God, I feel so inept talking to someone of that ilk. Oh my goodness, and experience and intelligence. Anyway, we'll take a break, and we'll come back and we'll talk to another extremely intelligent young man, Gary Larrabee, who is a sports historian here in the area, along with being our golf writer. We'll get to Gary in just a minute.
MSO Radio is where you can hear North Shore news and sports newsmakers, such as new Newburyport High School football coach Mike Levine.
So the first thing for me is going to be to incorporate a lot of the wonderful guys that worked here last year with Coach Gaudiano, along with any new staff members that we bring on, and make sure that I have a staff that kids feel comfortable with, that I feel comfortable with, and I'm sure we'll end up with some excellent football coaches, and together we'll put this team where it needs to be.
Good luck to Newburyport head football coach Mike Levine. This is MSONewsSports.com. MSO Radio, North Shore Now, news and sports. Monday nights at 7, it's North Shore Sports Night, the North Shore Sports Talk Show with Rick Moore and Tim Kearns. MSONewsSports.com.
All right, we're back, and Gary Larrabee has joined us once again, sports historian, golf writer. And Gary, how are you?
Very well, Rick. We're back into some more golf weather despite these hurricane force winds we've had the last 2 days, and one more day, I guess, but still, otherwise, it's great. That last week was just incredible for golf, and this week looks like a nice dry week with more wonderful opportunities for all of us to go out there and chase that little white colata.
Well, the way I'd be chasing would be as a caddy, perhaps. But, Gary, I guess we should start with they're calling it, the fifth major or something or other, but the players. You want to recap that for us?
Yeah, Kyle was the Jason Day show from day one. You know, Jason won the fourth and final major last year. The PGA, he's been in contention for majors the last few years. He's the fellow who fainted last year and had problems while in contention at Chambers Bay for the U.S. Open. And he's basically now, without a doubt, the number one player in the world, which he is. He's in the rankings number one. He's won like seven tournaments in the last 12 months or something. And he, you know, won the TPC yesterday in a very impressive fashion, like four shots, shooting, 15 under, and he made a nice, cool $1.9 million, and now we're just waiting to see how he gets ready and handles Oakmont. The next real major is at Oakmont in June next month, and he will clearly be the man to beat based on what he's done the last 8 to 10 months.
Yeah, it looks like he won by four strokes over Kevin Chappelle. Was that the name?
Correct, and Kevin, poor Kevin, only won $1.1 million to finish second.
Oh, you're killing me, man. You are killing me.
Teach your babies to be golf.
There you go. Lord have mercy. Yeah, okay. Well, I know a lot of parents who are helicopter parents who are working their kids towards soccer scholarships, but that's another story. Oh, man. So what else is going on, Gary?
Well, I think we have talked about what happened today over at Salem Country Club. Salem is hosting next year.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
June 26th to July 2nd, the 38th U.S. Senior Open. And we had a little year ahead of our time media day today. The winds gave us a real, pardon the language, ass-kicking out on the golf course. And one of my colleagues described it because we were just getting knocked all over the place. It was so windy and gusty. But when you get a chance to play an amazing place like Salem Country Club, you don't pass it up. So we had a nice time, and most important, Ron Force. The architect of record over there the last 20 years. He did a beautiful job on Salem's 54 bunkers back in 1994, and they brought him back to do minor things over the last 20 years, but last fall he was the man in charge of restoring the 18 greens to their original shape and dimensions from when Donald Ross did the course, finished it up, and opened it to the membership and 1926, the greens had lost some of their shape over the course of a mere 90 years,
mm-hmm.
And it was time to do this project. It cost the club $500,000, but it's a big news. The greens will play a little different. They'll have different pin placements for the members as well as for major events like the Senior Open next year. And hopefully, we have maybe 50 people there. And hopefully, Eddie Carboni, the executive director, spoke, as did Bill Sheehan, the general chairman. And hopefully, Rick, when we talk about this, the very same event, pretty much about the same time next year, that we'll talk about John Daly, maybe, or Davis Love showing up if they win the championship this summer at Sayago out in Columbus, Ohio. The winner typically comes for the next year's media day, since they're the defending champion. We'll hopefully have a wild and crazy time if John Daly wins it this year and comes out to Salem to take part in media day next year.
Absolutely. And I should point out, Gary, the website for the Senior Open, which was, I got it by going to Salem Country Club, but the website for the Senior Open is, it's chock full of information, and if you want to get excited about it right now, just take a look at that website. Oh, my goodness.
Indeed, and of course they just announced last week and put up on the website last week online registration if you'd like to be a volunteer. They needed about 3,000 volunteers for this tournament. I think they've signed up about 500 just since last week. And you're welcome. Anyone's welcome to sign up online. If they have 3 or 4 days, they could take off and donate a half a day to work a volunteer position. They might very well be on the golf course. It might be off the golf course. But if you're interested, check out the U.S. Senior Open website. It's 2017ussenioropen.com.
Yep, and I'll make sure Kearns gets a gets into this stuff, because he should volunteer over that.
Yeah, we'll pull a few strings if we have to.
There you go. All right, Gary, anything else you want to mention?
Just mention that one of KPN's finest women, most prominent golf people over the years, Susan Hudson, who's been living in Manchester for many years, 35 years maybe. They have the New England PGA held last week, the annual Hudson Cup, which is the annual one-day tournament for any PGA assistant professionals. They had this tournament last week at Duxbury Yacht Club, but it does honor Susan Hudson, who was a longtime member of the New England PGA staff, one of the very first women executive directors in the country. And last week, the winner was Sean Warren from Falmouth. He shot 4-68. Two of our locals made the top 10. Todd Scarafone from Turning Hill shot 70, finished 4th, and Derek Franklin from Bass Rock shot 74 and finished tied for 10. So all kinds of local angles to the Hudson Cup tournament last week at Duxbury.
Excellent, excellent. And I know that you're busy tonight, Gary, so I'm gonna push your homework to next week. Next week. We'll do next week. And I want you to see if you can recommend a golf site or two for me on the internet, because this U.S. Senior Open thing is just fantastic. This may satisfy me all by itself.
Well, I've got several lined up. We'll talk about that next week.
All right, Gary. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Have a great week.
You too, Gary. Take care.
Bye.
Gary Larrabee, our sports historian here on the North Shore and our golf writer with good stuff. As always, the U.S. Senior Open, he is the media liaison for the 2017 U.S. Senior Open that will take place at the Salem Country Club. And I was remiss in not pointing out when we interviewed Charles Learson, his website. All the stuff we talked about and more can be found at charleslearson.com. And that is LEERHSEN, charleslearson.com. And again, he's been featured in Sports Illustrated, on ESPN, and he has the Book of the Year in Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty, for the year 2015. I can't wait to read it. And, you know, if any of you high school, if I don't know the high school kids listen to us, but if the word gets around, for God's sakes, read about some of these people. Know your sport. Know some of the history of these incredible athletes from the beginning of the sport right on to where we are now, and you will be amazed at the exploits of some of these dudes. Amazing. And Ty Cobb, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but Ty Cobb's competitive spirit was just incredible. He did slide hard into second, but Charles Learson quotes one of the second basemen as saying that, you know, Cobb never came in spikes high. He came in hard, but never came in spikes high. And he got barrel rolled a couple of times, and Cobb never complained about it. And I think there was one other issue where he got knocked out, I think, by a catcher at home plate, and you know, shook it off, got up, and you know, went to the dugout. Never said a word to the catcher. So, going to make fascinating reading. Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty, and just terrific, terrific research is what is so fascinating about it. Among the story, you know, the stories that are told as well, of course. Okay, I'm rambling. Let's get back to the experts. We're going to take a break and check in with Beverly Boys lacrosse coach John Pinchon. The Panthers, I believe, are unbeaten. We'll check up on that in just a minute, and we'll cover some more scores. We'll cover a bunch of scores for you in just a bit.
So you come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Sylvan Street Grill has a great new Game Time menu featuring delicious new dishes, specials, and all-time favorites, too.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Bradford Tavern, the Rowley Destination Restaurant, featuring many modern touches, nestled in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, seafood, and many quality daily specials. The Bradford Tavern is open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to midnight, serving lunch and dinner. See you soon at the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, 89 Haverhill Street, Route 133. And check us out at bradfordtavern.com.
All right, thank you, Bill. We're back with John Pinchon. He is the Beverly High School boys lacrosse coach. Coach, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I had you a little bit ahead of schedule here, but you guys are perfect so far this season at 16-0. You just told me, and certainly that is going to make you pleased to this point.
Yes, we are very happy with where the team is right now. I think our goal isn't to win them all, but when we do, we certainly are enjoying them.
Absolutely. Coach, I got to tell you now, I was down on the field last week. I forget what day it was, but you were playing Gloucester, and I came up to you just before the end of a half and said, you know, can I talk to you after you've talked with the team? And you said, sure, because I'm looking at the scoreboard, and I won't give the score, but it was very lopsided. And I thought it was the end of the game because I just thought it was the end of the game. I got there, and, you know, I thought it had started earlier. And it was the end of the first half. So I had to go somewhere else, but you guys were up so big in that one. And I know that, you know, there's a tremendous legacy at Beverly High School of boys lacrosse. And maybe before, you know, we talk a little bit about where you guys have gone this year, a little reflection on that history at Beverly because it is so rich.
They have had a great program going back to the late 70s. I've been lucky enough to go through. We have a pretty good record of every team, and I've been able to go through the records and look at the each year's success, and I think, you know, every year they've been competitive in the program. There's been a few losing seasons, but even in those losing seasons, they were, you know, just under 500 and competitive with the teams that they were playing, and we're now into the era where kids who are on these teams have had parents who've played in the program, and the tradition is just tremendous. All the way up to obviously the Peter Ginolfi era when they won a state championship and were competing with Beverly with Duxbury every year for the the best team in the state. The kids who are in the program now, kind of, you know, they were a little young then, but they certainly understand that tradition.
Well, I was talking to Dylan Girard tonight, and Dylan was, I think the Gloucester boys are playing Swampscott tonight, and he was telling me that the Gloucester team has 19 members on its varsity, and you have something like that many seniors on your team, so you certainly have a good turnout.
Yes, yeah, we this class has been very strong for the last 4 years. There's 19 kids that came in as freshmen, and a couple of guys kind of didn't make it all the way through. We picked up a couple other guys, but to have 19 seniors is one of the main reasons we're where we are. It makes my life very easy.
Do you find that senior leadership helps with some of the younger kids in that, you know, they know the routine, they know what you expect, and not that they would go on autopilot, but as you said, it makes things a little easier on a daily basis.
Yes, yeah, having guys, Jordy Rodding has started every game of his high school career on the varsity team, so he knows what we're doing, and he understands he knows the, you know, everything from the warm-up to what we're expecting at practice to how he knows how I'm going to be reacting to certain situations, and he can kind of get ahead of things. So having seniors who've been around the program and who've learned from great seniors, we've had a number of great senior classes come through the last few years and set the bar high, and this year's group is just continuing that and even, you know, moving the bar forward.
I know you've talked with Bill Newell earlier, but maybe you could tell us again about your captains and how they've done this season.
So we have two captains. Jordan Rodding is a midfielder. He takes face-offs, plays defense, plays offense. He's been outstanding for us. He is, off the top of my head, he's in the 30-plus point total right now for the year. We have a pretty balanced offense, so there's not one guy who's really dominating in the scoring. But Jordan's definitely one of our main offensive players. And then on the defensive end, Sam Trakoff is an outstanding defender. He's a great basketball player.
Yep,
he brings
yep.
a lot of that defensive basketball skill into the lacrosse field, plays great position defense, and he's been outstanding for us on the defensive end.
Terrific athletes, and I know the Rodding name has been around for in Beverly sports for about 3,000 years. Oh, my God. Coach, how would you? What's the strength of your team? How would you characterize what this particular group is?
Well, they're very skilled, and they do... They understand and play the game at a fast pace, which helps us. But I think, you know, at this point in the season, the thing that I'm the proudest of is how they are as athletes in terms of the mental side of the game. We were in some tough spots early, down 5-1 to Walpole in the very end of the third quarter, and we were able to come back in a back-and-forth game with Winchester, and we were able to prevail. So they've shown a lot of mental toughness that, as a coach, is one of those things that I think can take a good team or a great team and push them to the next level, make them a championship-level team. And these guys certainly have shown that this year.
And when you have a team like that, Coach, you have to play, you got to play everybody that's on the schedule, and you have to respect everybody on the schedule. But obviously, some schools are less of a challenge than other. But I guess in that case, it gives you a chance to play some of the kids who might not get as much playing time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we carry a big roster for a high school team, and we expect that every kid on the roster is giving just as much effort and putting just as much time into preparing as, you know, the 10 starters. And we really, really have been lucky this year that when a game is in hand and we feel like we're in a good place, we've been able to get a lot of guys in. Everyone has played a tremendous amount this year. And I think I looked at it last night. I think 26 kids have scored a point this year for us.
Wow, that's great.
Which is just, a testament to their hard work, because we expect when they get in a game that they execute and they perform, and they've done it, and it's made it for an enjoyable year.
Well,
I've had years where you only play the mm-hmm. 10 guys because every game's tight, and it's hard on the team. But this year's been special that we've been able to get everyone in and everyone's contributed.
Former Gloucester football coach Paul Ingram always says when you can get the kids in, it makes for an easier week at practice in football. So I'm guessing from day to day it might make a better practice as well, because the kids feel so engaged, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to be a younger guy or a guy who's kind of a backup, because you don't really, you might not get a lot of playing time, but this year we've been able to get a lot of those guys in a very decent amount of time.
Yeah. And when you score a goal as one of those fringe players, it really feels good. I know that. Coach, what do you got coming up now?
We have 4 regular season games left. We play Wellesley tomorrow, Melrose on Thursday, and then we play Reading next Monday and Masconomet on Wednesday. So we got 4 great out-of-conference teams. 3 of them are Division I teams. Melrose is a very strong Division II North team who we've had some really tough games with in the past. So we're excited. The next 4 games are going to be a great test for us.
Now, you guys are Division II?
Yes.
Wow. All right. And you've had a lot of experience with the Division I schools, which will only get you readier for the tournament. Mm-hmm. Coach, I appreciate it. And needless to say, now when is your next game?
We play tomorrow at Wellesley.
Tomorrow at Wellesley. All right. So we're going to stay in touch and see if we can follow you through the tournament. But in the meantime, thanks for taking the time and congratulations on a fantastic season.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Coach. Take care.
Bye.
That is John Pinchon, who is the Beverly High School boys lacrosse coach. They are at 16-0 at the moment, with 4 games remaining on their regular schedule. And as you heard, 3 Division I schools left and 1 Division II school in Masconomet. Whew. All right, I need to take a break, and let's see who's next on the agenda. We'll see if we can get a hold of Bob Boyce, see how Danvers made out today in baseball, and then we'll run through the scoreboard. You are listening to MSO News Sports at, and MSONewsSports.com. Our email is MSONewsSports@gmail.com. I'm Rick Moore, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. The voice of the North Shore is Bill Newell. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodright replacement windows. Why Anderson? With low E glass, low maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, Bob Boyce, assistant baseball coach over at Danvers High School, is with us. Hi, Bob.
How are we doing tonight, guys?
We're doing good. Hold on here. Let me just turn the music off behind us here. We're doing fine. I think Kearns is. Kearns is still coaching freshman baseball, so he won't be with us for a couple more weeks. But what's the situation in Danvers? What's our weekly update?
Well, we won 4 last week. We were honored to play in the Pitchers for Pete ALS thing over at Fraser on Saturday against a really good Essex Tech team. That capped off our 4-1 week, and we won today down in Revere, and a big showdown on Wednesday with Peabody.
What was your score today, Bob?
It was. We'd rather just not talk about it.
Okay, so
it was a lopsided score.
Okay, I get you. I get you. That's fine.
Yep.
That's fine. All right. So, anybody in the last 4 or 5 games? Anybody pick it up for you? Or are you getting the same results from all the kids?
Pretty much the same guys every time. And today was a great, really good team effort. We're getting contributions from guys up and down the lineup. Pitching has been really strong and timely hitting. You know, it's a good recipe to have. It's an age-old recipe in baseball. Good pitching, good hitting, good fielding wins a lot of games.
Well, yeah, yeah. And the attitude of the kids at this point, Bob, because it's been so dadgum cold, it can't be comfortable for these kids playing out there.
Today they had a really good attitude. I think the situation in the game helped a lot. But Revere was very cold. It was very windy. But they also know they're playing baseball in New England. They also know they have to adapt to the situation at hand. And it's no different than it was Saturday when it was 80 degrees and sunny.
Yeah. What's your record? Today, what's your record now?
We have 14-2. And like I said, playing Peabody on Wednesday. They had a tough game today, I heard. But this will have. We have 3 games left in the league, and they all mean something now between Beverly S and Peabody for implications to win the league.
All right, and is that a home game? You told me, and I didn't catch it.
Yeah, with our last 5 games are all home. They're all at night, hoping for big crowds, and we're just hoping for good baseball games.
All right, everybody healthy?
Everyone as healthy as we're going to get.
Well, that's pretty scary for the rest of the league, I'll tell you. Bob, that's awesome. Well, listen, brother, stay warm, and we'll check in with you next week.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Take care. That is Bob Boyce, who's assistant baseball coach over Danvers, winners over Revere today, and the Falcons now with a record of 14-2. All right, we're going to take one quick break, see if we can get a hold of Nick Kukuru, and see if we can get some updates on Cape Ann League scores, Cape Ann scores, and then we'll run through our scoreboard before we call it a night. This is MSO News Sports. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO. Don't forget our MSO email is msonewsports@gmail.com. Drop us a line, critique, criticisms, comments, whatever.
MSO Radio,
North Shore Now,
news and sports. Marketing and advertising slots are now available on msonewsports.com. Banner advertising, radio commercials. We have numerous marketing and advertising opportunities on our website. Banner advertising, radio commercials in both news and sports programming. Catch on with us now. We have special spring and summer promotions. We are providing an exclusive product, radio and video features with North Shore Newsmakers. For more information, click on the advertise button on the top right-hand corner of our webpage.
All right, we're back, and Gloucester Times Sports Editor Nick Kukuru is aboard now. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, very well. How are you doing?
Excellent.
All right, where were you tonight?
I was at the Gloucester softball game against Marblehead.
Okay, it was cold. You're on the waterfront. The wind and the dust is blowing in your face.
Yep.
As I had to leave after the sixth inning to get here, and it was 3-0 Marblehead at that point. How'd it end up?
Yeah, that's what it finished. 3-0 was the final. Was Marblehead's pitcher, Charlotte Plankins, was just on fire all game. She just kind of mowed Gloucester down, 9 strikeouts. And Karina Keenan was great, too, for Gloucester, but a couple errors did the trick.
All right, now where are the two clubs in terms of standings? I know Gloucester is pretty close to a tournament bid, aren't they?
Yeah, Gloucester's 1 win away from the tournament bid. They're 9-5 now.
Okay.
They should get that, no problem. If not Wednesday, on Friday against Lynn English. And Marblehead's 12-2 now. They're still the leaders of the NEC South. You know, Gloucester was 2 games behind them, needed that win to have a chance. Now it looks like Marblehead has created some separation there with that.
Jeez, Marblehead, they've got some teams, I'll tell you.
Yeah, they do. They beat Gloucester Baseball this afternoon, too, 8-inning game. Gloucester had a big comeback in the seventh. They were down 7-4 going in the bottom of the seventh, come back to tie it. Then Marblehead hit a two-run homer in the eighth to win it.
So that was 9-7 Marblehead?
Yes, and now that puts Gloucester in desperation mode. It's going to be real tough for them to get into the tournament.
All right.
They're 6-9. They got Swampscott, Danvers, Beverly to end this week. So
okay, and I know
they got to win a couple of them.
In girls lacrosse, the Gloucester girls pulled out a big one today, 10-4 over Salem.
Yeah, big win. Now they're tied for first in the NEC South, and they control their own destiny for a tournament berth. 10-4 win. They spread it around. I think they had four girls with multiple goals. Good defensive performance. So that was a huge win for them. If they can take care of business against Saugus, Winthrop, and Revere down the stretch, you know, they beat all three of them handily the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
They'll clinch a share of the conference title and get back to the tournament.
And didn't Salem beat Gloucester in the first girls game?
Yes, Salem beat Gloucester 8-5 in the first
girls
game.
Okay, all right. So that's
Gloucester didn't have goalie Lily Coons that game, though.
Okay. Well, she was outstanding today in the game I saw.
She's been just a rock for them in goal this season, so I know that was probably a real tough loss for that first Salem game, not having her back there.
All right, and boys lacrosse, Gloucester boys lacrosse is playing Swampscott?
I haven't heard a final for that one yet.
All right.
That's the one I'm waiting on. That's a must-win for Gloucester boys, too. They have to win this one because they got to win three out of their last four. The next two they should win. I don't think they'll be beating Ipswich in the season finale, so they needed this one tonight, which was, had the makings of a good game.
Well, I just finished talking with Beverly coach John Pinchon, and oh my God, what a machine.
Yeah, they sure are. I'd say they're probably the favorite in Division II North, not just, forget the NEC.
They're
in the section. We'll be seeing them probably playing in another state title game in June.
Oh, yeah. And
how good they are.
They could probably compete in Division I. They're excellent.
And they've gone down to the South Shore and scheduled some really tough teams down there and beaten them, too. They haven't just played all the teams up here. Lacrosse a little stronger on the South Shore than it is on the North Shore. And they've went down there and taken on those teams and won, too.
All right. And I see Pentucket softball beat Georgetown today 8-7.
Did they? Oh, that's a big win for Rockport now. Rockport now needs one win to get into the postseason. So they've been hitting the skids a little bit the last couple of weeks. So that was a real important one for them. They were losing early, too, from what I saw in that game.
Mm-hmm.
So it must have been a nice comeback for Rockport.
Absolutely. And I got that from Twitter, so I hope it's accurate. I'm just seeing if we have any other keep-in scores. I don't see any. I just see in baseball that Lynn English beat Peabody today 7-3.
Wow. That's kind of the way the NEC has been going this season. I feel like there's been head scratching results all over the place. Peabody is, I saw Gloucester pound them 10-3, but that's the same Gloucester team that lost 9-2 to Winthrop. So you don't know what you're going to get from night to night from anybody.
I love it. That's what sports is all about.
Exactly.
Well, Nick, I know you're very busy and it's late. Anything else you want to mention about our Cape Ann sports?
No, just coming down the stretch run now, so a lot of teams are in, tough spots or looking to snatch up those tournament berths. Today was like the big day for everybody, especially in Gloucester.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone had a big day. Actually, Gloucester boys tennis, we didn't mention, picked up a nice 3-2 win over Salem, and that puts them right back at 500 with four matches to go.
Oh, very good. All right, and the other thing is, any features coming up in the times we should know about?
Figuring it out. I just got back from vacation, so I'm trying to look out.
I hear. And the family okay? The little kiddos all right?
They are, yes.
I know you're not getting a lot of sleep right now. Yeah. Okay. All right, Nick, we'll talk to you later on.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Nick. Take care. That's Nick Kukuru, the Gloucester Times sports editor. So let's run down the scores as we have them. We'll start with softball. As we mentioned, it was, I don't think we did mention, Pentucket 3, Newburyport 1 in 9 innings. It was Rockport 8-7 over Georgetown. We know that Saugus won, but I don't know against whom or by how much. And Marblehead shut out Gloucester by a score of 3-0. In baseball, Marblehead beat Gloucester in extra innings. In 8 innings, I believe it was, by a score of 9-7. 2-run homer in the top of the 8th, pulling it out for the headers. I should say for the Magicians. Lynn English over Peabody 7-3. North Andover is now 10-0 after their win today, and I don't know who they beat. Bishop Fenwick 8, Arlington Catholic 2, Fenwick makes the state tournament, and St. Mary's moves to 11-4 with a 17-1 win over Mystic Valley. In girls lacrosse, Wakefield over Lexington, 14-13. It was Gloucester 10, Salem 4, Beverly 11, Swampscott 4, Essex Tech 13, Saugus 7. And Newburyport defeated Triton, but I don't have a score on that. Boys lacrosse, it was Pentucket 15-10. I don't know who they played. Triton 13, Newburyport 6, and it was Stoneham over Saugus 6-5. And in boys tennis, Triton 3, Newburyport 2, and as you heard Nick just mention, Gloucester 3 and Salem 2. That's the scoreboard as we have it. Check the website. We'll have more stuff up there as things go along. Whew, busy hour. I miss my man Kearns, but he'll be back pretty soon. My thanks, my very special thanks to Charles Learson, our special guest, an author, book writer, award-winning book, Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty. You got to get it. It's fantastic. Gary Larrabee, sports writer, sports historian, and golf writer. Bob Boyce, assistant coach at Danvers High School. John Pinchon, the Beverly High School boys lacrosse coach. And Nick Kukru, the Gloucester Times sports editor. Check the website in the morning. Bill will have plenty of scores up there. We'll have North Shore today, of course, very early on Tuesday. That's it for me and for our producer and engineer, Bill Poposky, and the voice of North Shore, of the North Shore, really, Bill Newell. I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.
This is MSO Radio at msonewsports.com.